Hello, everybody, and welcome to our summit, Experts Secrets to Diabetes Reversal. And I'm so happy that today we have with us Joseph Bartolone, who is a registered dietitian and is going to be talking to us about some things that can be very helpful to you if you're thinking about or in the process of reversing your own diabetes, prediabetes, or even metabolic syndrome. Welcome, Joseph. So glad to have you here. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you became involved in nutrition and its impact on disease. I would love to hear your story.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you for the introduction and thank you for having me today. So since I was very young, I've always been interested in nutrition. My father passed away from a heart attack when I was 5 years old. So that kind of sparked my interest in it. And then I had some health problems as a child into my 20s, early 30s, nutrition was the way that I kind of coped with that and dealt with it. I kind of, you know, realized the types of food that I ate would make me feel better or worse. So it just kind of started like that as a kid. And then growing up, I kind of, you know, got lost a little bit, didn't know what to do, and ended up finding, you know, the dietetics field. And then once I found that field, it was like, oh my gosh, there's people that think similar to me, like, this is crazy. From that point on, it's just been all great stuff, working with great and passionate people. And yeah, that's pretty much where I'm at today.
Well, that's great. And I love how a personal experience brought you into this field. I find that many people that I talk to who have gotten more and more involved in lifestyle approaches and how we can improve our health, prevent disease, and even reverse disease through lifestyle interventions, often come there from a background where they've either seen lifestyle work or seen what happens when you don't live a healthy lifestyle. So that's very interesting that that was also part of your background coming in. And as you've come in and really learned more about the impact of food on our health and how our bodies deal with it, I know that you've spent more time working in the area of gut health. Now, a lot of times as diabetics, our doctors don't talk to us much about our gut. They might talk to us about our blood sugars or our A1C levels, but rarely will a doctor say, well, how's your gut doing, or discuss how to improve your gut health. So why is gut health important for someone who wants to prevent or reverse diabetes to know about?
Yeah, great question. So pretty much I see tying in how I got involved with gut health and how it applies to diabetes. Pretty much like looking at gut health, I see it as kind of like the body as a car, and the gut is kind of like the steering wheel, right? Like all of the parts are important, right? Sometimes you have different diseases that like diabetes that affect different like parts, right, on your body or the car. But, you know, if you don't have a steering wheel, you pretty much can't, you know, guide your health to where you want to go. The way that that kind of plays into diabetes is, a few different things. The three main things that I've come across in researching this is, one, you know, the types of carbohydrates that are consumed for diabetes and how that kind of interacts with the gut microbiome, how it could improve the, even prevent diabetes from occurring, and also improve the outcomes in people that have diabetes. And then also how, you know, keeping a healthy gut can kind of keep that infrastructure and kind of prevent, excess gut permeability or damage to the gut which can lead to different autoimmune diseases. There's links with type 1 diabetes for it. And there's also links between the gut microbiome composition and patients with type 2 diabetes.
That's interesting. Now let's back up just a little bit and unpack it. Okay. For example, you talked about how important it is to have a healthy microbiome. Just for those who may have not heard that term before, what are we talking about with a microbiome?
Yeah, definitely. So the microbiome, right? The gut microbiome is the most popular microbiome. But we also have microbiomes everywhere. Our skin, our eyes, our pancreas, our liver, right? And they're all different microbiomes.
So what does the word mean?
Basically, it's just like an environment. Like an environment of bacteria are pretty popular nowadays, like probiotic organisms. Uh-huh. But there's also parasites. There's also viruses. There's also amoebas. Like all of these things form the environment. And when you kind of think of the microbiome, a lot of people think of like, oh, bacteria is bad, it causes disease. But the important part about the microbiome is more like any environment, right? The balance, like any having, you know, it's possible to have too much good bacteria in the gut microbiome, and that could throw the environment off.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is that the microbiome is kind of, it's a term that refers to kind of the ecology of all the living organisms in our gut. Would that be a good way to say that?
Yes, that is an excellent summary.
Okay, so it means that includes the bacteria, the parasites, the fungi, all of those microorganisms. By microorganism, I mean they're so small you can't see most of them with a naked eye. Some of the parasites you can, but by and large, much of this is kind of invisible to the naked eye. Yet, it creates an environment within the gastrointestinal system, that is your whole digestive tract, that has a direct effect on our body and in many different ways, sounds like.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So now another thing you mentioned before you go forward, I want to make sure we really unpack what you've talked about. You talked about how eating different kinds of carbohydrates can affect the actual integrity of the lining of the gut. Because you talked about permeability. So is our gut naturally permeable? Is that a good thing, a bad thing?
Yeah. So it's good. Our gut is naturally selectively permeable, right? Ah. So that, that's the key, right? We selectively want to bring in all of the useful nutrients that we need to help our body run. And we want to get rid of, you know, the stuff that we don't need. And we form, you know, bowel movements or urine with that and then release it, right?
Right.
It's about that, efficient.
Yeah, I like that. So when we eat, there's parts of what we eat that our body can use and can metabolize, can turn into energy, can turn into tissue, but there's parts of what we eat that our body can't do that with. And it does other things like, I don't know, what are other things that part that our body doesn't use can do? Does it just totally waste it, or does it have other functions? Like fiber, you know, things like that we don't actually digest.
Yeah, definitely. Fiber, it has a lot of functions. In diabetes specifically, you know, some of the beneficial functions. One that's very common that is brought up a lot is it helps, you know, bind cholesterol, bind some of these molecules and release them with bowel movements to get rid of them. So that's also a useful way to, you know, bind excess blood sugars and release those so that the body has a regulated amount of sugar in the blood to use. Talking about the gut microbiome and short chain fatty acids, fiber isn't digested in the small intestine. it goes down to the large intestine to get digested. And there is where it's digested by all of these bacteria that form short chain fatty acids. And that helps protect the lining of the gastrointestinal tract, which also is the gastrointestinal tract lining and the like the state of your gastrointestinal tract lining is connected with diabetes, right? They found that people that have more like not selectively permeable that allows more molecules out into the bloodstream that, you know, shouldn't really be there. That's been linked with type 2 diabetes. So
that's interesting.
Yeah. So fiber promotes the short chain fatty acid production, protects the gastrointestinal lining, linked with improved outcomes in type 2 diabetes, and also linked with prevention of diabetes.
That's really interesting. So the fiber that my body can't actually even digest in and of itself goes to the large intestine, and there's bacteria there that break it down. Since I can't do that, but the bacteria can, and as a byproduct of that digestion, they produce something that protects my intestinal lining and helps it not to let things that shouldn't go through it, go through it out into the blood. Am I following you on that?
Yes. Yes. Great summary.
Oh, that's awesome. And then, so we're seeing that there's evidence that the higher our level, the level of short chain fatty acids produced by this bacteria that are eating the fiber, the higher those levels, the healthier the lining of the intestine is, which means that it works properly. It lets the things through that should go through, like water, or there's not much more it goes through than water, probably in the large intestine, but it allows that to work well and to be healthier and to heal, maybe even if it has been damaged.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. And that is linked to diabetes. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. So if we have good production of these short chain fatty acids by this bacteria, it can be a protective factor against diabetes, especially type 2 diabetes is what we've seen so far. Is that correct? Did I follow you there?
Yes, absolutely. There's a link with type 1 diabetes as well. It just has more to do with the way that the gut microbiome interacts with the immune system.
Ah, it's an immune system link there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I remember hearing that some people develop type 1 diabetes because the body attacks the pancreas and destroys the beta cells, which is like an autoimmune kind of response.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that the healthier your gut is, the less likely you are to have this kind of malfunction of the immune system. Oh, that's great. Now, you also were talking about carbohydrates and that some carbohydrates promote this healthy condition, but maybe some don't. So what's the difference? How can we know?
Yeah. So basically, like you brought up, fiber, right? Basically a type of carbohydrate.
Okay.
Acts differently compared to, it's a more complex carbohydrate. It takes longer to break down. Compared to like simple carbohydrates, like, you know, the easiest one to point out is like table sugar, right? Sucrose, which is added in a lot of foods nowadays. But yeah, a lot of these also like processed foods have sugars that are more simple, and the body kind of everyone's tolerance to it is different, but the body kind of like if it's too fast, right, the simple sugars are too fast to try to like get into your, it get absorbed by your body, and your body can't keep up, it starts to run behind.
Oh, okay.
If you have fiber instead, it's more of a slow absorption, so your body doesn't have as much problem absorbing it. And that can, right, over time, when, if your body's constantly trying to catch up, right, that could lead to all sorts of different malfunctions, like, you know, insulin resistance, or it could also lead to the pancreas getting overwhelmed because it's trying to produce a lot of enzymes and it's constantly trying to catch up and doesn't have any time to rest.
Right. And I think anytime we make choices that make any organ of our body overwork, we are actually promoting the wearing out of that organ, and it tends to lose function maybe earlier than it would otherwise. And the more we cooperate with the way I believe God designed our bodies to work, the better off we are in so many ways. And so it sounds like you're talking about simple sugars, which are often the largest component of any refined sugar, are a little bit harder for our bodies to handle than sugars that may be more in the form of starches that are more complex, harder to break down. And so we actually need to make sure that we're getting plenty of the more complex carbohydrates that break down slower, and they don't spike our blood sugars in the same way. And they don't force our pancreas to produce these large amounts of insulin all at once, because the sugar levels went up all at once. Everything kind of levels out and can work better, sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely.
So have you seen very much of this kind of impact with any of your clients that had either type 1 or type 2 diabetes? You see them as they change their way they choose to feed themselves affect how their disease progresses?
Yeah, absolutely. Incorporating though, like kind of having this same discussion about the complex and simple carbohydrates, and, you know, getting them to understand the balance with it, right? Like, you don't want to have, like, you don't want to have 90% simple carbohydrates and 10% like complex carbohydrates in a meal, right?
You want to. What do you want?
I would say in the other direction, like probably 90% complex and 10% simple, but it is optional. Like, it's, and it's, you know, it's based on the individual. If like that tolerance level that kind of I was talking about, for some people, they can handle that 10%. For some people, you know, maybe they can't. And, you know, just understanding how, you know, along, always, you know, backing it up with the data. So a lot of the patients that I've seen were taking their blood sugar, you know, they did it like 1 to 3 times a day. So having that, and them, you know, seeing how that affected them individually. I have had, you know, patients that really can't tolerate as much as that. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about that is once they stopped going towards those foods, their cravings decreased a lot. And it kind of changed their satiety toward, like, and what they wanted to eat, like what kind of carbohydrates they chose.
Interesting. Now, is there any connection between cravings and the kinds of microorganisms in your gut by any chance?
Interesting. I have not specifically, like I haven't looked into any specific studies.
Okay.
But from from patients I've worked with, their hunger kind of goes all over the place. When their digestive symptoms start to change.
That's really interesting. So, do you see this improvement tend to go along with, for example, the proportion of plant-based foods in their diet versus animal products? Like what direction really it seems to improve the, you know, decreasing their cravings, helping them feel better, have more energy? what do you see as the comparison if they're mostly plant-based or mostly animal products?
I find that if they are mostly plant-based, and I do, you know, I've had clients that are completely 100% vegetarian or vegan, and even the patients that do incorporate animal products, you know, the plate that I encourage is, you know, mostly plant-based, right? Because once they shift over to a mostly plant-based diet, it makes it easier for them to choose those complex carbohydrates. So even like, even sometimes without telling them, like, they kind of, you know, the foods that they have to choose from on their own are improving their gut health.
Isn't that interesting? So it's kind of like a positive feedback loop here, whereas that the more plants in your diet and the more you move away from those animal products, you actually feel like, and you want to eat more of the healthier foods. You kind of lose some of those cravings for the unhealthy, highly refined, highly processed foods. Mm-hmm. So that is very interesting. And you know, I was thinking as you said that it's another kind of function of fiber, is that you're only going to find that fiber that you need for feeding the good bacteria in your gut. You're only going to find that fiber in plant foods. Like, it doesn't really matter how stringy or tough your beef happens to be. There's some fiber in it, right?
Yeah, definitely. Because the balance of the microbiome really is mainly kept in a good ratio by fiber.
Ah, so that's really key to that balance that we need to have in our gut. There's so many hundreds and maybe thousands of kinds of microorganisms, but they have, they're like families, aren't there? Like certain families, and certain families are associated with better health outcomes than others. You know, I think I was just reading somewhere not long ago that there's actually certain families of microbes that are associated, for example, with obesity. And as you switch the prominent microbe families in the gut, it can also have a direct link to how people struggle with their weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And from the studies I looked at, a lot of those too go along with type 2 diabetes. A lot of them include like weight gain, obesity, and type 2 diabetes. And the two main families that are brought up the most are something called Firmicutes and Bacteroides. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm saying those right, but yeah. So that ratio is what a lot of studies refer to as when the ratio is off and lower, then you're more at risk for type 2 diabetes, you're more at risk for weight gain, you're more at risk for, you know, a lot of metabolic diseases.
That's great to know. You know, as we talk about these different things that can affect our ability to heal our bodies, to reverse chronic illnesses like diabetes, it occurs to me that there are a number of truths that many people don't hear commonly, doctors don't talk to their patients about, but that can be very powerful in the outcome that someone experiences as they go down this road to better health. And from your point of view, your vantage point, working with gut health and nutrition, what would you say is maybe one of the most important truths that people aren't talking about or maybe don't know about so much, but is actually true about how we can help our bodies and support our bodies in health and healing?
Yeah. There's a lot, but I would say, I would say the main thing is that, like, balance and consistency over time, right, is important. And the reason I say that is because I have like with people with digestive issues, a lot of times they'll go towards like a low carbohydrate diet, right? And that is just completely avoiding the issue, right? Their symptoms may decrease a little, but long term, it causes a lot more issues, right? So when I say that, like balance and consistency, it's kind of like reintroducing these fiber foods in a way that people can tolerate it, so they don't like all of a sudden start introducing like all these fiber foods, and then their bodies, you know, got to catch up, right?
To that. That's an important point, because fiber is super important, but the bacteria have to adjust to our changes in diet, don't they?
Yeah.
So if we're going to increase fiber in our diet, which many of us need to do and would greatly improve our health at many different levels, it is something that we want to do in steps, not overnight. Would that be true?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, just that, like how we tolerate it is important, because, you know, for someone who goes, hey, I'm like, it's kind of like that yo-yo dieting mentality where it's like, tomorrow I'm going to go, like, I'm going to only eat like, you know, vegetables. I'm not going to eat any fruits. I'm only going to eat, and I'm going to cut out, right? I'm coming from like a normal American diet, and I'm going to go 100%, right? Some people, that might work. And if they could continue doing that for the rest of their life, fine. For most people, it's better to ease into it and, like, you know, go from the diet that you have to shifting over, start introducing these more fiber and these plant foods, and, you know, have introduced foods, the complex carbohydrates in a way that's sustainable.
Oh, that's important, because like you said, yo-yo dieting doesn't just move the needle on your scales. It puts the bacteria in your gut on a feast and starvation cycle, right? And that's not a very good way to maintain that healthy balance we've been talking about. The good bacteria need consistent feeding, right? And not just sporadic or intermittent, or they can't stay healthy and they can't maintain the balance that we need for health. So that's a great point that we need to think about how we move forward, and to do it judiciously is what I meant, in a way that allows us to be to do it sustainably, that we can tolerate it, that our gut bacteria tolerate it well, and we can adjust over a number of weeks, probably better than over just a couple of days. Anyway, that's really helpful. And I really appreciate all that you've shared with us today, Joseph. Now, I understand that you also have something you would like to offer our audience for free today that's going to help them in this journey. Can you tell us just a little bit about what that is?
Yes, absolutely. So I work with some other dietitians, and they are in a practice called Merida Health. So I work under them. They came out with this Good Gut book, basically an A to Z guide of, you know, a lot of what we were talking about today, those complex carbohydrates, and how to introduce those along with different recipes for A through Z of a lot of these foods. So I'll be offering the first chapter of that and kind of an introduction into the book for, you know, everyone who shows up to the summit.
And here's another little tip he didn't tell you, is if you go and sign up for this little freebie, which is like a sampler of their A to Z book, and I've already taken a peek at it, and it's beautiful and really informative, and I think you will really get a lot out of it. Just this sampler has more information than Joseph and I have had time to talk about in this session. And if you get that free download with the link below this video, then you will also be eligible for a discount on the whole book if you decide you want to go buy the whole book. So you win-win. It doesn't matter how you go with this, but I would really encourage you to go ahead and get that sampler chapter on from the ebook A to Z, Gut Health A to Z. Is that, do I have the title right?
Yes.
Okay. So that you too can take good care of your gut. And that's going to be a real ally for you in the journey to disease reversal, as well as disease prevention. So thank you so much, Joseph, for making that available to our audience. Really appreciate that. So yeah, you can just get that by clicking on the link below, and you'll have a little sign up form, and you will be able to get all of the A's for gut health, which is a whole lot of them, plus some really yummy recipes. So that's wonderful. So Joseph, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here today. And all of us have learned something today, I'm sure, that will help us to enjoy healthier, happier guts, which will make us happier, healthier people. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.